The Meaning of 8 Miles. Working for the Civilian Conservation Corps, or the CCC, in the 1930s, my grandfather Albert Tuhawk, then nearly 50 years old, was part of a construction crew building a dam. To get to work, he arose at 4 o'clock in the morning and walked 8 miles to the job site, and then walked all day guiding, more like wrestling, a 4-foot-wide dirt scoop pulled by a team of 4 horses. When a day's work was done, he unharnessed his horses, fed, watered, and put them in their pen, and walked 8 miles home. This was his routine for 6 days a week for several months. When I was about 5 and he was 62, I watched him build a log house mostly on his own with only hand tools. That was the first time I can recall thinking my grandfather could do anything. Looking back on it now, anyone who can build a house while a 5-year-old boy is underfoot in every conceivable manner is capable of miracles. My grandfather was a man of many talents. He could wield an axe, a bucksaw, a hammer, or a butcher knife with consummate skill. He could skin and quarter a deer or a steer faster than anyone and make skillet bread over a campfire. In such ways, he was like many Lakota men of his generation. But there was something that set him apart. My grandfather had something that isn't dependent on skill or strength. He knew how to persevere. My grandfather certainly had the requisite skills to do the job for the CCC. He knew horses, for example, and wasn't afraid of hard work. The dollar or so he earned every day during the Depression went a long way to support his family, my grandmother, my mother, my uncle. But walking 8 miles to work, in addition to many, many miles on the job, and then 8 miles home, only to do it again the following day, required more than ability or physical strength. I can't imagine the bone-weary fatigue he must have felt each night. My grandmother said he would arrive home, eat, and fall into bed. It's one thing to succumb to fatigue at the end of an exhausting day. It is quite another to wake up before dawn and persuade yourself to do it all over again. That is where perseverance kicks in. Perseverance rises from the spirit, rather like a sleeping giant. When we've reached our physical limits, or we've collided with a barrier that tells us we can't or shouldn't. It enhances strengths and capabilities, awakens our determination, and enables us to move beyond our limits, coaxing from us just enough effort to keep moving, to keep reaching and striving, despite the weariness or pain or despair. There were moments, I'm sure, when my grandfather felt as if he were battling with a giant that summer, working for the CCC. He was at that time still in his physical prime, and he was a very strong man. But it was more than physical strength that kept him going. There was, of course, adequate motivation to push himself day in and day out. He had a family. But for every story of a man or woman who makes sacrifices for family, we hear of one or more who abandons family, who leaves and is never seen again. What makes the difference? What does the man or woman who makes sacrifices have that the one who leaves doesn't? Love of family? Selflessness? A sense of commitment? It's safe to say that both the one who makes sacrifices and the one who leaves had examples to follow. Chances are that the man or woman who makes sacrifices had someone in his or her life who exemplified commitment or perseverance. Perhaps he or she heard a story about defeating a giant. The truth is, anyone can persevere. And why is perseverance a necessary virtue? Because sometimes, perhaps too many times, it is the only answer, the only course of action left. My grandfather had to persevere in order that his family could make it through some extremely difficult times. Where did he find his example? In a sense, my grandfather had examples of perseverance all around him. His people had to survive individually, and as a group, by using the last weapon in their arsenal, perseverance. The only person who could have led an effective, organized military resistance against the whites was the Oglala Lakota leader Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse was killed at Fort Robinson, Nebraska, in September of 1877 as a result of the jealousy of some Lakota and the gross misunderstanding and paranoia of white military commanders. The old days were gone. The wars to repel the whites were over. And rising to prominence in Lakota political circles depended on currying favor with the whites. Crazy Horse was the last Oglala to have the unquestioning loyalty of his people that was so desired by many other would-be leaders, and there was jealousy. The white commanders were afraid of his influence over the many Lakota fighting men who would readily follow him against them. Thus, the few jealous Lakota fomented a rumor that Crazy Horse was planning to kill the commanding general. The commanding general took the bait and attempted to have Crazy Horse incarcerated. As he physically resisted the attempt to jail him, a soldier stabbed him with a bayonet. The only other leader at the time who could have rallied enough fighting men to him to be a serious threat was the Hunkpapa Lakota Sitting Bull. But the U.S. Army had stepped up its campaign against the Lakota as a result of the defeat of the 7th Cavalry at Little Bighorn in 1876. So in 1877, Sitting Bull was in Canada, seeking sanctuary from the pursuit of the government. There was, therefore, no way for the Lakota to resist militarily. Sitting Bull was killed in 1890 primarily because of the same kind of paranoia the government displayed in the situation regarding Crazy Horse. In 1889 and 1890, the Lakota embraced the Ghost Dance movement, begun in the Southwest by a Paiute Indian, which advocated performing a special dance that would put them in touch with dead ancestors and help bring back the old life before the coming of whites. The government saw this as nothing more than a basis for a military uprising, one that could be given impetus if Sitting Bull were to join. To prevent that, they attempted to arrest him, and during that attempt, Sitting Bull was shot and killed. With him, then, died the last possibility of a strong, organized resistance to white encroachment. Therefore, when resistance ceased to be an option, surviving within the parameters of white control on the reservation was the only choice. There was no other option but to reach deep inside and persevere day in and day out, year in and year out, from one generation to the next. Persevering in these circumstances meant ensuring that our language, our traditions, customs, values, the essence of what we were as Lakota, survived as long as possible. The first generation of Lakota to cope with life on a reservation could no longer defend themselves on the field of battle, so they fought with the only weapon at their disposal, spiritual strength. That spiritual strength, that willingness to persevere in the face of forced change, has enabled my generation to stand not only on our own as Lakota, but also on the shoulders of those who went before, those who faced the giant, and showed us how to persevere.